Hello again, I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media. Time for another hour of work from our students at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. A bit later, Camden Cohn. First up are Skyly Nelson and Jacob Schrantz.
Welcome into Up Next Sports, the show where we will break down our thoughts on high school athletics all across the country. My name is Jake Schrantz. I am a sports media and broadcasting student at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I am so excited to get this show going right here inside Anderson Hall with my co-host.
Jake, we're both excited. I'm Skyly Nelson, a senior double major in broadcasting and sports media, also at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Go Huskers! And Jake, as we mentioned, we're excited to bring a new light on high school athletics, specifically recruitment and that whole process that it takes to get to the next level.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, and we've talked to a few people here for the first episode. I think it's a little bit more complex than even you or I thought. We have experience in high school recruiting and just kind of following it in the media, but we got to hear some interesting things from some of our first guests on the show.
Yeah, Jake, both of us high school athletes obviously didn't make it to the next level, but saw recruiting happen firsthand. High school recruiting has experienced a transformative shift, giving colleges greater access to athletes worldwide. Huddle, a sports technology company founded in Lincoln, Nebraska, has expanded that reach for colleges, schools, athletic directors, coaches, and athletes to make a more seamless process for high school recruiting. Senior Director of Huddle Studios, Kelly Mosier, talks about the opportunities Huddle provides high school athletes across the world.
A lot of high schoolers are trying to get recruited, and Huddle kind of helps with that process. How does your job, either directly or indirectly, help those athletes?
We see a lot of the value that we provide to athletes is really helping them get noticed. That's one of our big vision statements for ourselves. We believe very heavily in sports, and we believe in giving everyone within sports the shot that they deserve, which means we're here to help coaches, we're here to help athletes visualize and actualize their full potential. For athletes, that has meant for a number of years finding ways to help them take their best moments, collect those moments, and then share them with the people that help them get noticed, whether that's news reporters, college recruiters, friends and family, whoever it is. It's just that ability to take all of that film, put those moments together to showcase the best of their skills so that they can get their shot that they deserve at the next level.
And typically high school athletes don't receive much coverage or recognition, but through posting those on social media, how have you seen social media grow in that aspect, having those clips on there and then retweets or reposts from that?
We started our highlight editor project really before social media was at the level that it is today. And so the original goal was to take this process that we heard from our coaches, which was where they have to burn all these DVDs or VHS tapes even before that, and physically mail those to coaches, and just how much of a pain of a process that was for them. And so the idea was, we have all of this video content from coaches already on the cloud. We could easily create a system that athletes could still go in and edit those highlights and then take control of that process themselves, and remove all of those barriers of having to know how to physically burn DVDs and all that. To instead be able to create the highlights, you just get a link. You can send that out in any way, shape, or form you want to try to get in front of whoever you're trying to get in front of. What that really has done is giving athletes the power to tell their own story. And so with the rise of social media happening roughly at about the same time that we were working on updating and changing the way athletes could create highlights and send those to recruiters, those tools together created a very powerful tool that allowed athletes to own their own journey and tell their own story. And so we very typically see athletes creating highlights, linking to their Huddle profiles on their social profiles, and using those tools together to grow their audiences on the social profiles, and then using Huddle as the source of truth for their athletic achievements, so that they can showcase their best of the best, again, to just make sure that they're owning their own journey so they can get the shot that they deserve.
And coaches at the high school level are investing in the technology. How have you seen this improve the coach's ability to get involved with the athlete?
really is a team effort. It takes everybody kind of working together to make sure that the highlights are where they need to be, that they get edited and cut and put into reels in the appropriate ways and in the right ways too. And then that it's getting sent out to the right people as well and making sure that the right people are seeing it.
It started with VHS tapes and now it's links. Where do you see the future of high school recruiting going with huddle technology or just individual aspect of recruiting?
Overall, that personalization and the ability for athletes to own their own journey, that's not slowing down, and that's something we think about almost every day here at Huddle, is what are the other tools that we can help empower athletes to make sure that they're able to own their story and share their story and get connected with the recruiters in the right way.
You mentioned college recruitment as well. You're essentially making college recruiters' jobs easier by opening up like worldwide athletes into this pool where they can watch their videos, watch their highlights. So how do you think this better makes colleges able to find athletes like across the world instead of maybe just in one state?
Yeah, totally. And they're absolutely. Technology is just an amazing tool that allows people to connect irregardless of geographic constraints. And that power given to colleges, just it makes people more efficient. Allows them to get better data on the potential recruits that they're looking at and just opens up the overall pool of athletes that they can look at and choose from to make sure that they're able to find the best players for their systems that they can find, regardless of where they're from.
Yeah, great stuff there, Skyly. And I think it's really interesting the way that sending your tapes out to coaches or scouts has changed. A lot of hard copies, like a VHS, and now it's just a simple link that you could send in an email or in a DM on Twitter or Instagram or any of the other thousand ways you can do it on the internet now.
And social media has really expanded that as well. You're seeing tweets from students across the world. I know Cooper Flagg has been a big one. Everybody knows who that is now because of social media and the coverage that the media has started to play a role in these students tagging or hashtagging SportsCenter Top 10 in specific plays. So Huddle really just brings that all together and makes it easier for athletes to get a hold of coaches. Women in sports do not receive the recognition they deserve. But when given the spotlight, they prove to the world that women belong in sports. Women's athletics, no matter the sport, has always been in the shadows of men's events. The coverage time of women's sports, according to a 2019 study, totaled only 5.4% airtime. Across all major media outlets, 95% of airtime is dedicated to men's athletics. But it cannot be because viewership numbers are lacking. This year, the NCAA Women's Championship was the most watched women's college basketball game in women's college basketball television history. A viewing audience of 9.9 million, and it didn't stop there. 2 weeks later, the NCAA Women's Gymnastic Championship broke a 16-year viewership for the sport with just over a million viewers. Nebraska volleyball selling out Memorial Stadium, Iowa women's basketball hosting a game at Kinnick Stadium, and the Women's College World Series peaking at 2.3 million viewers proves that if you build it, they will come. Serena Williams, Alex Morgan, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Jordan Ball. Those are only five names of female athletes of all levels across the board, paving the way and creating opportunities for young girls across the world. They're leading the shift for media and covering women's sports and providing a bigger stage for young girls to continue chasing a bigger dream.
And I can't tell you how many high school student athletes I've seen, whether I was going to school with them or people I see coming up in the sporting world where they have their Huddle link in their bio. I see it even in the college bios of people who aren't even playing sports anymore. It's just really interesting the way that that aspect of it has grown, because a lot of the recruitment process is now almost on self-promotion and making sure your name is out there. It's been like that before, but now it's a lot quicker as you really can send it out to a mass audience instead of having to send it to individual people over and over again.
And it makes it easier, too, the contact method. I mean, college recruiters at all levels, it seems like their job has to be easier. You're getting students and these athletes across the world sending you their best stuff. So you're able to take a look firsthand at those athletes. And it makes it easier to get in contact with schools as well. You're reaching out to athletic directors and coaches who are also sending these tapes to all of these college recruiters, trying to get their students to the next level as well, because I know a coach and athlete's bond is, you can't top that.
Well, speaking of coaches and athletic directors, it was important to get that perspective here on the first episode of Up Next Sports. And we talked with Andrew Sherman, the athletic director of Lincoln Southwest, and he has a lot of great things to say about this kind of transformative period of high school recruiting. What does the process kind of look like at Lincoln Southwest in terms of either bringing in colleges for recruiting or kind of working with some of the students in terms of getting in contact with some of these colleges?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're very fortunate here. We have a ton of kids go on and play at various different levels, and pretty much every sport and activity, you know, is represented at the next level. And I will tell you, so I've just transitioned into this role. Previously, I was the head football coach for the last 8 years. So I can really talk to what recruiting looks like for football. I do know just the you know, each day I'm learning more about my new position in the other sports. Every sport is very, very unique in how recruiting works. I know that you know, it's one of them things that the kids are marketing themselves more and more. Twitter X is huge when it comes to coach contact and student and player contact. But I also know that as soon as that connection has been made, one of the most important things is the communication between our head coaches here at the high school level and the recruiting coordinators or the recruiting coaches at the colleges, because that's really where they find out, you know, the true character, you know, what the athletes are doing behind the scenes, how they act and how they participate in classes and that kind of stuff. Obviously are, you know, top of their list. They're not going to take somebody that's marginal student unless they're just an exceptional athlete.
It's almost similar to kind of college athletics with NIL now, the way you have to market yourself to the public with Twitter or other social media platforms. Is that something you guys are trying to take a next step toward, kind of working with some of these student athletes on presenting themselves publicly?
Yeah, well, we have a Southwest Athletic Leadership Team here. We call it SALT, the acronym. Yeah, everything's got an acronym. But that's something that we do talk about in our group. And, you know, usually the kids that are in that group aren't the ones that need to hear the message, but, it's our other kids that, somehow, some way we've got to do a better job of getting that message out to them. But yes, that's crucial.
While you were a coach or even now as the athletic director, if a student athlete came to you and said, "Hey, I want to make that next jump. I want to take the leap to the college level once I graduate," what's your response? What do you kind of help them do to kind of better themselves or get to that next level?
Yeah, I love that question, because ultimately I think the most important thing is for the kid to be realistic. I've always been able to build that relationship where I felt like I could tell our kids, you know, hey, honestly, you know, Nebraska Wesleyan plays awesome football. You know, Peru State, Doan, Morningside, Concordia, I'm going to miss somebody and they're going to be mad at me, Hastings, but they play great football. And you're going to get a good education, and you just got to be realistic and understand that. And playing is way, way better than sitting around and watching other people play.
What's your philosophy on multi-sport athletes?
Yeah, in our building, our girls are really, really, really good at being multi-sport athletes. Our girls programs are, they compete their tails off. You know, our girls the volleyball team obviously won the state championship 2 weeks ago. Girls basketball qualifies for the state tournament every single year. You know, our cross country, I mean, you name it, our girls sports. And so the volleyball team, I want to say, I mean, all of them, but maybe one or two are out for track, basketball, something else. And that's not a coincidence that those girls are competing at the highest level. You know, you don't have to play the same sport all year round. In fact, I mean, it's proven that kids that if all they do is one movement pattern, muscle pattern, they get worn out, they get frustrated, and they get sick of it. And our boys have a little ways to go in this building. We still have a bunch of, you know, they're good kids, but they only want to play one sport, you know, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there are a couple of sporting groups that could benefit, you know, the masses, and they would benefit a ton by going out and competing. We're working hard. I think it takes the whole building in order to communicate that. And that's definitely a growth area for us.
How do you see media outlets and their coverage of the high schoolers improve their marketing? Because social media can only go so far, but if 10/11 or the Lincoln Journal starts coming in and writing about them and they retweet it from a local level, how do you see that improve recruiting?
One thing that I wish, and it's impossible because there's so much going on, and I realize that now with my new job and going to events all the time, you know, I wish everybody got their moment in the spotlight. You know, our girls softball team, just unbelievable year this year, got beat right before the state championship game, semifinals. And I wish more people knew how good they were. And it's just not something that's covered. And to me, it's not because anybody believes it shouldn't be covered. It's just because nobody's really just jumped in and committed to doing that. And that's the same with, you know, the cross country. You know, I mean, if anybody knew how much mental toughness it took to run cross country, you know, I mean, I'm way too anaerobic to understand what that takes, you know, and not mentally tough enough to do it. I just wish that everybody had that moment in the spotlight. I really do.
What do those commitments or offers or just talk around specific athletes and recruitments in Lincoln Southwest specifically do for the rising in numbers of sports? So you said earlier, women's basketball, for example, is down, but they have Kennedy Williams who just committed. So what does her presence and like activism sort of do for rising numbers in women's basketball?
Yeah, well, let me start with Kennedy Williams is a stud. I mean, she's a top-notch kid, classroom, diamond, soccer field. What do they call that? A pitch? You know, the basketball court. So if she's an ambassador for women's sports and does a tremendous job. I don't know. I hope that all our younger kids that are around her and around others like her, or, you know, just continue to, you know, I don't know how much you gain by just being around. I know in the weight room, you don't get stronger by just being in there, but I do think being around good people does kind of rub off on you. You know, it takes those type of kids though to show the others really what elite people are and elite athletes are.
Again, that was Andrew Sherman, athletic director for Lincoln Southwest High School. And he moved up the rankings as well. He used to be a football coach, as he mentioned, now athletic director, kind of helping other coaches get their athletes to the next level. And a big part of that, as he mentioned, was building that personal brand.
Yeah, the brand is interesting. I feel like it's grown a lot over the past maybe 5-7 years. It almost reflects what we see at the college level, but now it's starting to bleed down into the high school level, where you have to make sure your brand is appropriate and make sure that you're not posting things that can kind of ruin your chances at moving to the next level. We see that with college athletes. You have to make sure that your brand on social media matches up with potential sponsorship deals with NIL. It's interesting the way that that's kind of shifted toward the high school level, not necessarily for sponsorship, but almost to promote yourself for the next most important thing, which is to get to college.
Right. And that social media presence, as he mentioned, it's still growing. New social media applications are coming out every day. And so just trying to find a balance of what you can post that reflects you and your school and who you represent is important. And Andrew just really talked about how he coaches up the coaches at Lincoln Southwest and promotes being aware of what you post and what you're representing on those platforms.
Yeah, I think it was interesting too. He talked a lot about making sure that they had the leadership in their own school to make sure that the kids are learning how to properly communicate and how to properly display themselves on social media. Because I'm sure there are plenty of coaches or teachers who don't have as much, frankly, don't have as much experience on social media as you and I would. So it's interesting that dynamic where people who are coaching or in the athletic department are almost kind of learning at the same pace as the students, because they didn't grow up with social media in high school. They have to almost kind of take those steps with the student athletes.
And that coverage too from social media comes from local news organizations bringing in video editing highlights at the end of the night, top five plays, showcasing the student athletes in that way, students republishing that content in hopes to, again, move to the next level. But it was nice how Andrew Sherman really emphasized the Division II, Division III, NAIA, and local colleges that maybe provide a more realistic approach for high school athletes to get to the next level. He understands that not everyone's going to be walking out of the tunnel at Memorial Stadium. Not everybody's going to go to one of the coasts or an SEC Power Five school to play football. Maybe a more realistic option is going to those lower athletic programs, but still reaching the college athletic title for yourself.
Yeah, I feel like that would be probably by far the toughest conversation you have to have with a student athlete, because anytime you have to tell someone to lower their expectations, that's never going to be easy. But I almost feel like that's probably what makes a good high school athletic director, outside of obviously caring for the program and knowing the program, to be able to make sure that your student athletes feel valued, but at the same time, you're putting them in a position where they can be successful in going forward. It's got to be very mentally exhausting to go into work every day and have to battle those questions on the daily, but you have to give kudos to people like Andrew Sherman and others.
Right, and there's boundaries, too, that you have to set. Not every high school athlete wants to go on to the next level. There's students who are just trying to get involved, and most of the time, maybe one person in your entire class will go on in any sport. Lincoln Southwest under Andrew Sherman has had quite a few recently as they're growing up their athletic department and athletic program at the high school. But just having that realistic mindset, which we've found out that Andrew Sherman has, being able to talk to students and understand this is how we need to coach the team as a whole, because not every person is trying to get to that point in their life.
And the roles are different for someone like Andrew Sherman versus somebody like Trev Alberts, who just got the extension at Nebraska. As a college athletic director, there seems to be some different things that you focus on versus high school. High school, it really is just fully on almost the academic part of the student athlete side. And there is still promotion for getting to college, but once you're at a college, there just are so many different factors like scholarships and just the amount of scholarships that can be given out and managing all the different coaches. There's some similarities, but I think there are also some crucial differences, which is why people like Trev Alberts make the really big bucks.
Well, you mentioned scholarships, but I think the elephant in the room is NIL and the newness of that Trev Alberts and every other athletic director across the world is trying to figure out and manage that in a way that athletes can use their brand to make the money, but how can we make it so it's not out of control? And that's sort of in the same way that Andrew Sherman is teaching social media practices to his high school athletes. Trev Alberts' job is to now get these coaches to tell their athletes, the college athletes, the importance of social media presence as well. But now it's at a higher stake.
And I'm sure it makes their job a lot easier when programs are able to bring in some of these high school athletes that had good coaching, not necessarily only on the field, but also off the field or off the court, where they're being told the right things, how to, you know, conduct themselves online, how to conduct themselves in public. If you're bringing in a bunch of student athletes who have no experience with branding themselves online, you're probably going to deal with a lot more issues with them making mistakes versus with some of these programs in high school that seem to be starting to implement kind of teaching these young kids how to promote themselves appropriately and how to make sure they don't make as many mistakes online. I'm not going to claim that they're going to make no mistakes. Everyone does. It's almost impossible not to. But to limit those mistakes really is the key at the high school level, it seems.
And we've seen how detrimental that is in an athlete's journey, especially at the professional level, because that's their job. They're representing a brand and they have millions of fans looking up to them. So one mistake at that level could lose your job, the point where you've worked all your life to get up there. So those mistakes need to come either at high school and college, if possible, not at all. But at least they're teaching student athletes along the way so that there's a greater chance it doesn't happen when they finally reach the point of professional athlete status.
And I would almost think that that's got to be difficult to handle, because there probably are students who aren't really thinking as much about the future like that while they're in high school. They're thinking, I just want to go home and get my homework done and go to practice. They're not really thinking about how am I posting about this? How will this impact my future in college or even further if they have the ability? It's got to be some, again, difficult conversations that these athletic directors are having with coaches, with players. I don't envy the job. That sounds very difficult. And when all these factors combine to form a successful college recruit, I think it's important then for the media to tell their story. And one of the best at doing this is Mike Sauter, who works with Herd At Sports and does a ton of work covering Nebraska high school athletics. He's always busy, but he still makes time for a phone call as he walks to Memorial Stadium to cover state football championships.
What are some of the challenges of covering high school athletes compared to college athletics in your experience?
Oh, man. Great question, by the way. First one. Some of the challenges are accessibility sometimes and just the broad spectrum of coverage. So you're not just covering one team, right? You're covering however many schools and however many teams there are in the state, which is, you know, hundreds. So it's a little bit harder because it's not, you don't have the only 12 or 100 players, I guess, or depending on the sport that you're covering to cover. So it can be a little more challenging that way. One of the main challenges that I have almost every day is the readily available statistics. Yes, we use Max Preps in Nebraska to put statistics in or find that, but it's not a requirement for schools to do that. So there's no, sometimes if schools don't want their information out there for whatever reason, as far as statistics are concerned, they're not required to put it out there for public consumption. So that's probably the biggest challenge, I would say, is just being able to find readily available statistics.
And what role do you think that media coverage, such as yourself or other people in the media, like coverage of these athletes plays in terms of college recruitment? Do you think that helps grow what schools are interested in them just based on being more publicly known, I guess?
Yeah. Exposure would be that word I think you're looking for.
Right.
Frankly, I started doing this on my own back in 2009, 10, 11, and the sole purpose or mission at that time, now it's totally evolved, was to help kids from Nebraska get recruited through the media. So, talking about them, writing about them, telling their story was totally all about that, right? Like, and that's still what I do today. It's at the core of what I do today, I guess. But obviously that's expanded, but yeah, I think it does play a big role. I really do. If you do it right, you have to be really delicate with it. You have to be professional with it. And I think if you do it the correct way, it can really be beneficial. For example, I tweet something out, or I guess X now, something out about a kid and their recruitment. And I get a call from a college coach, and then 5 minutes after that, ask one to know more, right? Or wanting to know, hey, we're on this guy too, or whatever. So I do think it plays a pretty big role.
And that was actually going to be my next question about if it is that explicit where college coaches or college scouts are like specifically reaching out to you or other media members about some of these student athletes and how that process works.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time. And that's just through, years of building relationships with coaches and obviously the athletes, but particularly college coaches. I feel like I do a pretty good job of getting to know them. And I think there's all the biggest factor there is trust. And they have to trust me, and they have to trust my opinion and my expertise, if you will. It's a loosely worded term. But they have to trust what I do and how I do it and my evaluation and all of those things. So I do think that is a big piece of it. There's a bunch of times that I get a call from a coach or something, and those are very private conversations. They're not to be public. And I think the understanding is very much so that they aren't public. That comes with trust and building relationships.
And then with the growth of streaming services and maybe some other media outlets like Huddle, for example, where do you think the future is in terms of high school sports and just kind of media coverage kind of coming together to continue to provide this platform for high school athletes?
I'm interested in seeing what that looks like in the future, as far as, you know, game streaming and all of those things. Like, anymore, a lot of high schools just drop a YouTube link out there and there's no production behind it. The really good ones have production behind it. Strive, obviously, is a huge thing in Nebraska and throughout the region, and they do a terrific job because it's more than just, hey, we're going to drop a link and this is, you know, we're going to set up a camera. No, there's a lot more to it, and provides kids an excellent opportunity to kind of learn the educational side of, I guess, sports media or digital media stuff. I feel like more of that is coming. Not sure what that looks like, but I'm obviously, I'm very intrigued. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, you're not, it's setting the next generation up for success, I guess would be the terms I guess I'd use on that. It's they're, you know, providing this skill that, think about it, like even 10 years ago, kids wouldn't know how to produce or even call a game. And now they're getting this opportunity. So it can be a jumpstart for a lot of kids and their future as far as broadcasting careers are concerned.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then just final question. I know you've got a busy schedule ahead of you all week. I know you recently sat down and you did an interview with Britt Prince, who has made her intentions pretty clear recently that she'll be on her way to the Huskers women's basketball program. But for these big time interviews where you have a very significant guest joining you, what does your preparation look like as you kind of get prepared to do it? Because I know earlier you said that a lot of times it can be tough to find reliable stats or just kind of background information on these athletes.
Yeah, a lot of, I will say, the preparation for it is every day. It's just what I do every day. It's just knowing people, and it goes back to building relationships. The reason why I was able to get that interview was, well, I've known Britt and her mom and the athletic director at the school and all of those things for a long time because I'm around and I've been there and they've seen me and they trust me. And that's the reason why I was able to get that. The prep for it was, for me, it frankly wasn't a lot. I had no prepared questions. I just sat down and let's talk. The preparation, if you will, just let it, it was months and the years that I've watched her play. That was the preparation for it. Just knowing her and her game and what she's accomplished and all of that stuff, that's just in my head because I've been around, I've seen it, I've been there. I didn't just, you know, show up one day and ask for an interview.
Well, Mike, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate your time, man.
Hey, no problem. Sorry about the noise.
It's all good.
All right, thanks.
Always good catching up with Mike Sauter, who covers the high school beat in Nebraska probably better than any other media personnel, but it really shows in his knowledge of the athletes and high school level with lack of stats information. And he talked about it a little bit, but the lack of that information really makes it hard for anybody to cover, whether it's play-by-play, color commentary, local TV stations across Nebraska. The lack of that information really puts the media behind, as it takes a little bit more time and just nobody really wants to dive that far deep without that ready-to-go information.
Yeah, and he did mention Max Preps a little bit, which is kind of a helpful tool. But as he said, that relies on schools putting in those stats themselves, which is not a requirement. Some schools do it better than others. So a lot of times, and you and I have done high school broadcasts before, it's very difficult to get concrete information. It's hard to tell if these stats are legit or not. And it can cause some frustration, but I think in that comes kind of where you cut your teeth in sports media, because it's been said a bunch of times, if you can work high school sports and do a good job, it gets easier as you get up to the college and the pro level, just because of how much more information is out there about these players.
It really comes down to the grind and extra efforts that all of these media people have to put in to just figure out coaches' names, school names. I know a lot of media professionals that come into local TV stations struggle with pronunciation. So when that information isn't readily available and only provided by the schools, it makes it difficult. But kudos to Mike Sauter, as always, who covers these Nebraska teams at an exceptional level and shows what it should be like in relation to coverage of college and NBA and NFL and all of these professional organizations.
And it's such a strange thing because you have to think eventually these high school athletes are going to become the college superstars that all of these media organizations are spending so much money covering. So why is it that high school athletics doesn't get that same treatment to just kind of get ahead of that problem and start to build some information a lot earlier on? That's kind of one of the stranger things about it to me, is that there's not as much investment in the stories of these players at this age level or at this point in their athletic career as it does only 2 years later once they step on to a college campus. Sports and sports media have become a very congested form of entertainment in 2023. Professional sports, collegiate athletics, and even some high school events have become fair use for evening entertainment all across America. Many platforms outside of the traditional cable networks have dipped their toes into the coverage of these games. Streaming platforms like Twitch have provided live stream content for the Nike EYBL Peach Jam basketball tournament this past summer, where future stars of basketball like AJ DeBanza and Cooper Flagg were on display. When given the chance to play on these platforms, young athletes get the chance to grow their personal brand and give audiences something to latch onto. Young fans feel a special relationship to many of these popular young players, seen with the immense social media following from top players like Flagg, who has almost 500,000 followers on Instagram. There have been examples of major high school games on national television, like when LeBron James led St. Vincent St. Mary against rival Carmelo Anthony in Oak Hill Academy, but more can and should be done to feature the young sports superstars going forward. Major television networks are missing out on the nearly 10 million people who are locked in on high school sports with accounts like Overtime on social media. If they can figure out that they need to cater to this audience as well, we may finally see some growth in the world of sports media.
Well, you bring up a good point, too, but with the lack of stats, as we mentioned earlier, it makes it hard to figure out who these top-notch players are. I mean, sure, there's a couple big names, but they're getting coverage all over across the board. So they're outliers in terms of high school athlete coverage. But again, like, why aren't we covering teams now and athletes now to help them promote or help promote them on social media or those other things and make high school transitions to college easier when they're going to be interviewed constantly in the media and highlights of shows and papers and on the big screens.
And it seems like with more media coverage, these players also, not just the media members would be more prepared. It seems like the players would also be more prepared as they would, going into freshman year, it wouldn't be their first press conference ever. It wouldn't be their first interview. They would have had 2, maybe 3 or 4 years of prior experience in media being the interviewee or the person being covered. And I want to kind of pick your brain. What was the experience like for you? I know you went out and shot a lot of high school highlights. How did that process go for you? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
It took a lot of adjustment. Again, I had no idea who were the best players on the team. Obviously, for volleyball, for example, after halfway through set one, you already know who the dominant players are for that team. But it takes a while in adjustment trying to pick out the best players. Obviously, throughout the season, you cover a team so much and you know. But football, for example, who are you? What side are you trying to cover it on? That was a big thing for me, going out to these small towns. And I know I would get sent to big games sometimes, but I was like, well, actually, the smaller town has a bigger game, so why aren't we covering them? And it always came down to viewership levels and audience interests, which do make sense. It's all about a money factor, but at some point, these smaller teams are looking for the same representation.
Yeah, and it's got to be tough to come up with availability to cover those teams, because we were just having discussions earlier about how there are only so many jobs in sports media to be able to go around, and to actually be able to cover every single high school in the area, let alone every single high school all over America, it's unfortunately not as much of a possibility as you would think, unless something changes or opportunities become available at a different level outside of just professionalism. If it becomes maybe part of a college experience where you are the media member for a school or for a region.
Yeah, and we were talking about it earlier, as you mentioned. There's only typically sports rooms with maybe two, maybe three people, and even then, they're looking to move up. So the games they care about are college-level games, professional-level games, but in smaller markets, that's really where they get their start, is covering these high school games, taking that to the next level. So without the grind and without their interest in moving up to the next level as well, these high school players, it all just kind of comes down to the same thing. Everybody's looking to take the next step and find out who's on top, whether it's in the media, athletes, coaches. Everybody's looking to improve and build on their skills. Today, we dove deeper into high school recruitment, rising technology, and sports coverage. Thank you for joining us in the inaugural episode. This has been Skylie Nelson and Jacob Schrantz. We'll see you next time on Up Next Sports.
Welcome back to another episode of Camden's Chronicles. I'm your host, Camden Cohn. Today, I wanted to talk about something that had a big impact on my life and taught me so much about not just myself, but life as well. Growing up, I played basketball, soccer, and baseball. I have long legs, so my mom would always tell me that I looked like a runner, but I never truly considered running because I was a baseball player at heart. Don't get me wrong, I could fly up and down the base paths, but I didn't think that I would have the stamina to run for long periods of time like you do in cross country. The races are 3.1 miles. That's a long ways. I went to Lincoln East High School and played baseball my freshman and sophomore years, but after my sophomore season of baseball, I could see the writing on the wall and decided to hang up the cleats. I needed something to do with my newfound spare time, and I was able to convince one of my teammates, Chase Kavanaugh, to run cross country with me. We learned a lot about ourselves in those 2 years, so who better to talk about the high school cross country journey than someone who was there with me through it all, junior accounting student at UNL, Chase Kavanaugh. Thanks for joining me, Chase.
Yeah, happy to be here and hopefully provide some pretty good insight. You know, we both started running cross country at the same time our junior year, which was kind of an odd year to start, you know, compared to everyone else in the program, considering how competitive East is. Like, they're also a Class A school too, so.
Yeah, so we met our freshman year when we were on the baseball team together, and we really just hit it off from there. Mm-hmm. You played football in the fall while I trained for baseball. Then, unfortunately, your football career was cut short. You want to touch on that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 days after my first game, my sophomore year, I had a seizure in the middle of Spanish class. You know, it was kind of odd. At the time, I thought I had a concussion. That whole day, I just felt a little bit off. This was in the morning, too, so I felt... It felt really peculiar that I was having concussion-like symptoms after just waking up and not necessarily during a practice. So, I went and got checked out at Bryan Health Center. Turned out I had a seizure due to this thing in my brain, which I was born with, called an arteriovenous malformation, or AVM for short. Essentially what that is just a cluster of deformed veins in my brain. Like I said, it was something I was born with, so I played football with it for... contact football with it for 5 years, if you know, you count sixth grade and on. And just discovered it there because it was inflamed and invoked a seizure. So yeah, scary stuff, but that was treated via radiation treatment, which just got the spot to scar up, and it's virtually unproblematic at this point. I mean, the risk is, you know, a fraction of a percent, but yeah, glory to God for helping me get that issue resolved. And you know, it really just kind of forced me to grow up a little bit more than you would expect a normal 15-year-old to do.
Yeah, it was a scary moment for sure. We're all glad it's okay. But so that left the fall season open. And so the summer before junior year, I remember I was able to convince you to run cross country with me. Do you remember why you wanted to run?
I can't really say why I wanted to run cross country, if I'm being truthfully honest. Honestly, you know, it was just something to do. I knew people that did it. They said they were in the best shape of their lives. And you know, I played defensive end when I played football. So, you know, I was a little bit bigger of a boy, not built like your prototypical runner. You know, but that said, I just wanted to take advantage of the opportunities that came my way while I was still in high school. And, you know, with that, I thought, why not cross country? We'll give it a shot.
So once we got into cross country,
I remember the first couple of weeks of training was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It sounds like an exaggeration, but it's not. I remember we started off running maybe 2 miles a day at an easy pace, but if you weren't used to running long distances like we were, it was a painful couple of weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I remember our first practice, we ran 2 miles. You ran with Brandon Clean. You guys were able to run the whole time, whereas I was not. I started walking in the neighborhood on the way back just because I didn't have the gumption. You know, I remember you said, oh, Chase, you should be training for cross country. Just run a little bit, you know, go a mile or something the summer leading into it. But I was kind of a fool. I came in very unprepared. I didn't train at all. I think I ran maybe a grand total of twice, each of which was 1 mile, which is less than a third of a race. So yeah, safe to say I was not prepared for the season going into it.
I mean, we consider ourselves to be in pretty good shape too, because we both were multi-sport athletes. We both did a lot and stayed in shape, mm-hmm. but you're really not prepared for it until you go to those first practices and start training, are you?
No, not at all. You think you're in shape, and then you meet like state champion women's athletes that are minutes faster than you.
So they're running circles around you. I remember, yeah. This is in track, but we did a mile time trial, and this is our first season. And I remember there was a guy named Thomas Oliver. He went to run at Doan after, but he was a year older than us. Mm-hmm. But I remember he lapped me on the mile time trial. It was insane.
Yep, same here. And I mean, he had plenty of D1 offers too, so he was an amazing athlete. And I don't even think he started running cross country till his sophomore year of high school, which is crazy. That just blows my mind because of how good he was. But yeah, Doan ended up being the better fit for him. But yeah, he was definitely a high-level athlete, no doubt.
So certainly humbling when you consider yourself to be a decent athlete and then all of a sudden you're getting lapped in a time trial. So that was certainly a humbling moment. But I think cross country is a lot like life in general. There's some really good days of training, and then there's some bad days and you get injured. So like my senior year, for example, I had shin splints for the majority of the season. And it's just disheartening to know that you could do better and you have done better. But because of each stride and how painful it is, it's hard to stay in that tip-top shape. So what do you think cross country was able to teach you about life?
It's taught me so much about being resilient and mental toughness. You know, I came from football, and football was my favorite sport. I loved it so much. I wanted to play it past high school. And, you know, having that news broken to me that, you know, I can no longer do it for medical reasons, you know, was initially disheartening. But, you know, more so it was about where you go from that incident. You can't dwell on, you know, something not working out. But instead, you know, when God shuts one door, he'll open another. So just with that in life too, just take advantage of the opportunities that come your way. Even if they're not 100% your thing, you'll still learn so much from them. And I feel like I've really been able to apply that here in college too. You know, like even take being an orientation leader for an example. Going into my freshman year, I went to orientation over the summer where I got to meet a bunch of new students and whatnot. And when I saw all the juniors or upperclassmen dancing on stage with a red polo on and khaki shorts, I was like, no shot. This is so dumb. And lo and behold, 2 years later, I was doing the exact same thing. So yeah, with, you know, that in mind, just take advantage of the opportunities that come your way, and just, you know, make the most of your experience. And I feel like I was really able to accomplish that by running cross country in high school. And that's been a very transferable lesson beyond that.
Once again, that's Chase Kavanaugh, a junior at UNL and a former high school teammate of mine. Is there a specific cross-country moment where it really set in like, wow, this is hard, but this is a lot like life, I guess?
I mean, I think every single race. There was a 95-degree race at Millard South, I want to say. I believe it was our second race of the year.
Yeah, second race.
And there were so many times where I'm like, would it be more painful to finish this race or step in that tree stump and tear my ACL? I'm not even joking. I mean, like we said, we thought we were in shape, but you know, when you run a 5K on essentially no experience, you start to question yourself and what you're made of. But with that, you just got to stay the pun intended, stay the course, and yeah, just, you know, do everything the best you can and not quit until the job is over.
Head coach Brian Kaborik, Coach Kaborik, had a saying, I can, I will. And that's really the mentality you had to have throughout all those races, is that you'd start out really fast a lot of the time. And then once the adrenaline kind of wears off in that like second half of the race, you really got to push through and rely on your teammates to get you through the race.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, even just the way most of the courses were designed, you start going downhill, and you know, for every downhill, since it's a lap, yeah, there's an equal uphill. So, you know, the races was to start off, you'd have that adrenaline rush. You want to get out quick, but not too quick. And trust me, I was no expert at pacing myself. I think my race times made that evident. But yeah, just, you know, once that adrenaline wears off and it's just you in the uphill, and it's really just a mind game at that point. You're competing against yourself, and you just need to block out the noise, whether that's parents yelling at you. People passing you, and just, you know, continue to put one foot in front of the other. Just take things little by little and not have the whole picture in mind.
I think the mental part is really the biggest part of cross country, because you're on that back stretch at Pioneers Park, for example. We ran there all the time, and there's no one there. It's just mm-hmm. you and your teammates or your competitors, and you have to zone in and just keep saying one foot in front of the other and get up the big hill, yeah. Take the downhill seriously. Like, it's hard when it's 90 degrees and all you want to do is be done and drink water and mm-hmm. lay on the grass, but you have to finish the race. You're competing and you don't want to let your teammates down. And so I think that also with cross country, it promotes a certain work ethic. Like during the summer, when we trained for our senior year, you had to get up at 7 in the morning and go mm-hmm. run, because that's the only time it's cool out. Who else wants to wake up during the summer when you're off of school at 6:45 in the morning to go to school and run at 7 in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you were working the night before too, had a late night and whatnot. Yeah, there was a lot of mental toughness that came into play, not even in terms of the running, but just getting to practice on time and having the discipline to, you know, do things the right way.
So we talked about a lot of the down moments of cross country, but what are some of your favorite moments that we had in our brief 2-year stint of cross country in high school?
Yeah, for me, honestly, my favorite moment personally, because I think it really speaks to how hard I worked and how much I was able to grow within the span of a year, was when I got to run at Kearney my senior year. Junior year, they took the top 45 runners for each gender to the Kearney Invitational Meet. And, you know, that seems like a relatively low bar to clear, but I was like 46th or 47th in our program.
For reference, I made it, and I think I was like 43rd.
Yes.
So I barely scraped by to get into this meet, but continue.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I didn't make that my junior year, which, you know, I definitely felt like I was missing out. And it was kind of discouraging too, knowing that I was nowhere near as good as the top athletes in our
literally
program.
45 people better. Like, I know. And look, that's a ton.
And looking back, it's like, wow, that was a lot of people that were better than you. However, senior year for us, COVID hit, and you know, you had limited capacity on the bus and whatnot, and there were all sorts of restrictions. And so for that year, they only ended up taking 20 individuals to Kearney, and I was able to crack that top 20. And, you know, like I said, I feel like that was just such a testament to how hard I worked and persevered. And, you know, I got to wear this awesome zip-up jacket, courtesy of the cross-country program. So that was definitely the most fulfilling for me. I did not run a great race. No one ran a great race. It was like 85 and windy in like late September, early October. But, you know, my grandma is from Aurora, Nebraska, and she came and watched me too. So having my mom and grandma there to watch me after the last year, and just you kind of witness out all the work I poured into the sport, was really fulfilling.
People think of cross country as like an individual sport, but really it's a whole team sport, because mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's going for the best placement they can to get team points. So I mean, if you get first place, that's 1 point, second place 2 points, so on and so forth, and the lowest score wins. So every place matters. I mean, there's cross country meets decided by 2 points, and that's just because one person ran better than the other between two teams. So it's really a big team sport. So one of my favorite moments is definitely our Saturday morning runs that we'd go on. So usually we had meets on Thursdays or Fridays, and then we'd go run on Saturdays to be our longest run of the week, to get the lactic acid out of our legs, arms, etc. And so after we'd get done with the 7 miles that we'd go run, we'd have bagels and chocolate milk afterwards. And so that was just a super, I guess, fulfilling practice to know that you have food on the way back, as silly as I guess it sounds, but it was a reward for finishing that week and another week, hopefully injury free.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great way to end the week, especially with the camaraderie of those Saturday morning runs, too. You know, it was at an easy pace so everyone could talk. And, you know, like Camden said, we were just there to get the lactic acid out of our legs as well as just get a little bit more training. And, you know, when you're going that slow, you're able to hold conversation with one another and really get to know your teammates, too. And afterwards, enjoy some bagels courtesy of the boosters. So it was just a great day. Every Saturday morning practice, I certainly looked forward to.
Yeah, that was certainly my favorite practice every week. But when Chase says slow pace, it's not exactly a slow pace either, though. Like, it was, what, 9 minutes probably? Nine-minute mile pace?
9 minutes is the slowest I've ever went.
Yeah.
You know, senior year, I don't know if I've alluded to my inability to pace myself. But, you know, I was definitely trying to get faster. And, you know, oddly enough, my training kind of prevented that. So even on some of those slow paced runs, I would go to 7:30 pace just because I wanted to run near the kids at the top. So it definitely is what you make of it too. I feel like that's another key point of cross country. You can either have the attitude of, oh, this sucks, this is stupid, or, you know what, I'm gonna make the most of it while I'm here.
I mean, everyone looks at you like you're insane when you go out on these runs because they're like, I could never do that. I don't want to go run 7 miles, let alone 2 miles.
Yeah.
You have all the football kids looking at you because you look crazy running down a big hill. Mm-hmm. And usually we're yelling. Like, people think cross-country kids are weird. Most of them probably are.
Touche. But I will say, and going back to, you know, you talked about the team element of cross-country. Contrary to other sports I've played, cross-country was the most encouraging environment amongst teammates. There were little amounts of competition between players. Most of the competition was just with yourself. And, you know, with that, you talked about how, you know, where you placed indicates your team score. So you definitely wanted to be encouraging to your teammates and, you know, whether that was yelling at them when they're running the course or just, you know, being there as, you know, just a good friend to them really went a long ways. Not cutting our teammates down, but more so building them up.
Yeah, because you wanted both programs to be good. I mean, we had the best girls program in the entire state, and Lincoln East still does. I think they've won, what, 6 in a row now?
It's something absurd, yeah.
I think they've run 6 state titles in a row, so it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But so I took a lot away from, I mean, watching the girls practice and run as well, because they were some of the best athletes in the entire school, really.
Oh, yeah, way, way better than me. Like, so much, so much better than me. And, yeah, I mean, their attitude, like, through it all was just, they just weren't fazed. They were generally very happy, but also very steadfast, humble individuals too.
One member of the Lincoln East girls cross country dynasty is Ella Lessig. Lessig is currently a junior criminology and criminal justice double major at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and is another one of my good friends from high school. She was kind enough to join me and talk about some of the successes that the girls team has had and some of her favorite moments.
Well, the girls team's had a lot of success at Lincoln East. Obviously, they've won 6 championships in a row. What would you say is one of the main reasons for the consistent success?
I think that East has been blessed with a lot of just raw natural talent over the years, but a lot of that talent has been cultivated by the coaching staff and the really close relationship that all of the girls have with each other from year to year, and leadership from year to year just within the team itself. Raw talent doesn't hurt, though. There's a lot of that.
One of those leaders is head coach Brian Kaborik, and one of Ella's favorite Kaborik moments didn't even happen during cross-country season.
I would say the funniest story for me was at, like, 8th grade night, where, like, all the 8th graders from across the city go to the high school that they're supposed to go to and just walk around the school and meet like coaches of teams. And I was still between playing volleyball and running cross country at the time. I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And Kaborik bribed me to run cross country with a car wash gift card. I didn't have a car. So that was a good Kaborik memory.
If Ella had one piece of advice for people running cross country, it would be to use your teammates to your advantage.
Just make sure to relate and become friends with your teammates, because they are going to be a big part of your life for however long you're going to run. And it sucks, but you will have to rely on them and depend on them through the hard times, and they'll be there for you during the good times too.
Cross country is one of the most undercovered sports in the sports media landscape, but has some of the most amazing comeback stories out of any sport. Where else do you consistently see people helping others cross the finish line after they suffer heat stroke or an injury? Cross country brings out the best in people and is a lot like life itself. There will be ups and there will be downs, but it's how you bounce back that counts. I'm Camden Cohn. Thanks for listening to another episode of Camden's Chronicles.
Camden Cohn, Skylie Nelson, and Jacob Schrantz bringing in the new year on Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader.